Amen.
Yeah. Ooh. I really hate the TVs because these are the best slides I've ever made. Yeah. Now, the first one's lacking because somebody spilled coffee all over it. Not to point any fingers. I think she went with the kids. Luke chapter 13. I got two things I want to start out with for you today. One is three stages of grace. Most of us have a period in our lives where we get a little overwhelmed when we begin to realize that we have been wrong, that we have been sinful. And there we just kind of go, oh, God, I need grace. And then there's another phase that we go into, and in our humility as believers, we try to live a life where we hope for grace, where we really hope that our life is worthy, where, yes, we believe all of the Bible, and there's still this feeling of humility that God has forgiven me. But then there's a faulty stage that often comes next, and that's where we expect grace, where we expect God will understand when we know we're doing wrong things. And that has an arrogance to it. The only way we can live in that grace expectant stage, where we know we're doing wrong things and we are expecting God to understand, is to judge others. The other thing I'd like to say is that I believe that literally, every one of us literally believes the Bible until it knocks on our door. Then it stumps us. And so we begin in Luke chapter 13, as you can see on the slide, verses 10 through 17. I believe also that the incarnation was God's way of appearing before us in the human form of Jesus and later appearing in us in the spirit form of the Holy Spirit. God became one of us to show us how to live a biblical life. For Jesus says, I didn't come to do away with the law, and the law was the only Bible they had at this point. I came to fulfill it. That doesn't mean die on a cross. That means how I live is what the Old Testament's supposed to look like. And there are places where we believers go Old Testament. One of them is tithing. And we go to Malachi and we say 10%. Do you know why we go Old Testament on tithing? Because we don't like the New Testament version. Go sell everything you have. We're not fond of that. But we also stop with a biblical definition of tithing because the biblical Old Testament thing is the money went to the priest and the poor. And every now and then somebody preach on tithing, I say, I'm good for that, but John and I want half. Rest of it goes to the poor. You know how they built buildings? Out of the 90. The 10% was, you're just getting a little too literal for us, preacher. The other thing we like in the Old Testament is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And you know, if I ever have to defend myself, my .22 rifle's in there. I'm ready. Because we're not so fond of Jesus saying, if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. But we feel certain that God was mistaken in the Old Testament when he suggested we shouldn't eat shrimp, pork, or catfish. We go New Testament there. Because in the New Testament, it says you can eat anything you want, and we're all about New Testament there. But we're not so much about New Testament theological giving, because that means we're supposed to sell all we have and do what with it? Give it to the poor. So you see, we're all literal Bible believers right up to the point where it knocks on our door, and it brings us to our story today. For it's an ordinary day in the life of people of this day and time. Jesus is teaching in one of the synagogues. Oh, which one? We don't know. But he's teaching in one of the synagogues, and it's on the Sabbath. So it's just like you're doing this morning. It is just like you got out of bed, and you dressed the kids, and you combed your hair or shined your head, whichever it is that you do, and you got everything together to come to church. And here we are. Jesus probably would begin his day by reading the scrolls inside the church. And oh gosh, don't you know those priests must have felt special? Because somebody would have held the book for him. They would have unrolled the scroll. First of all, I could have somebody hold my Bible for me, but it's got to be so close for me to read, I'd look funny. The other thing, that's why I print it out, because it's just easier for me to see. But it's an ordinary day. It's in the synagogue. But the story says there was a woman there, and she had been disabled by a spirit for 18 years. And she was bent over, and she couldn't stand up straight. The belief of the day and throughout our Old Testament, and you know, we don't have a New Testament yet, and throughout the day was that if you had a lifelong ailment, if you had a lifelong infirmity, you had sinned, or your parents had sinned. You remember when they asked Jesus, did he sin or did his family sin? That was the connection. And so the story begins with the everyday lingo, she was deformed by a spirit. So let me guess, any of us as we get older and we begin to bend a little bit and not walk so well, are we now sinning? No. Jesus will refute that in just a minute. But she's been there for 18 years, and we do know that in all probability, Jesus had exited the formal worship and was now sitting out on the steps. Oftentimes, Jesus would sit on the steps of the synagogue to talk to people, because the people Jesus seemed to want to be with wouldn't have been allowed inside the walls, because if you were infirm, or if you held the job like of the shepherd, you would be unclean. And I'm the priest. I really couldn't be around you, let alone touch you or get into your space. And you wouldn't want to do that to each other, because you guys have to go home and ceremonially wash, take a bath, before you could come here, just if you touch someone. So Jesus is probably sitting on the steps. The key thing here is 18 years. And Jesus saw her. He noticed. He paid attention. She was outside for 18 years. And I give you a phrase that most of you have heard at some point in your life. It's a little twist to it. I can't see the forest because of all those trees. They were so busy doing the right kind of worship, the right kind of day, being with the right kind of people, that they overlooked something right before them for 18 years. Any of you that way? Any of us struggle with seeing the forest because we can't get past those trees? Do you? Over the years, when I was in Mobile, I chaired the District Attorney's Task Force for Domestic Violence, and every few years we would do what we called a regional conference, and we'd bring in speakers from all over the country. And it would tend to be from Montgomery, Birmingham South, and we would host that. And one year we decided to see if we could get a couple of our larger churches to host it. And three of the four we approached all said, that's not an issue we have to deal with in our church, because we're all believers. Let that soak in for a minute. One of my churches I served, I preached one Sunday about my dad being an alcoholic. And afterwards, a lady came up with a deep Southern brogue, not just the y'allness of it, but that other gone with the wind talk. And she said, you know, we don't like to hear those sorts of things from the pulpit because we don't have any alcoholics in our town. Sit with it for a minute. I can't see the forest because of all those trees. I can't see that woman that's been there for 18 years because of all of this. So what do you see when you worship? What do you see when you come here? Do you see everything that's wrong? And you guys have just gone through a building project. You know, in four of my churches, we've done this, either remodeled or built from scratch. And without fail, folks will be focusing on the chairs you're sitting in, the color of the carpet, the color of the walls, the placement of the cross, the type of pulpit, where Bill stands, what Bill holds, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. When it seems that when we gather for worship and we look around the room, the hope is that we see folks like us who at some point in our lives have been broken and wounded. And some of us who have crossed 60 and are headed toward 150, we begin to realize that there's other heartaches to come. You know, every now and then I sit there with some of the young clergy or even my kids, and I go, you know, I'm in my last 20 years of yayness. I'll be 62 this year. I hope I'm still playing tennis at 82. Yeah. What are you thinking about in worship? Denominational woes, all that's wrong in the world? This, that, and the other, politically, economically? Or are you focused on what God is doing right here, right now, right in this very moment? What's happening to the song? Right now, God is at work in someone's life in this space. Could be you. But there's the story. There's a woman, 18 years. Jesus calls her and says, "Hey, woman, you're set free from your sickness." Ooh, ooh, ooh. Did you catch it? He didn't say your evil spirit. He didn't say her demon. He just pointed out that it's wrong to look at people and think that. Woman, you're free from your sickness. And then he touches her. The custom of laying on of hands. He may have touched her by the forehead. He may have taken her by the back of the head and touched the front of her head. And he said, "You're well." And she stands up and she praises God. And something monumental has just happened in this place, because it does not appear that healing was commonplace, that people gathered around the pool, that people gathered in the here and the there. But until Jesus showed up, these things seemed to not have happened. Wow. And so here's a quote from Francis Chan's book, Letters to the Church. Some of you have read Francis Chan and his Crazy Love and Forgotten God. "The theology that matters is not the one you profess, but the one you practice. What you believe and profess is not what matters, but what you practice is what matters. The Bible you quote is not as important as the Bible you live." Francis Chan, Letters to the Church. Synagogue leader sees this. It's Sunday, it's Saturday for them, it's Sunday for us. Someone has been made well. For 18 years, she is upright. She is dancing, she is singing, she is experiencing something magnificent. And so the elder, the leader, the priest, the chief, the one who knows. For you see, they didn't carry their scrolls with them. There was no Gideon's pocket scroll back then. So the keepers of the truth, the protectors of the way, those who knew the Bible and knew how for you to follow it, and I say Bible because that's all they had right there with the scrolls. He is incensed. When was the last time you were angry enough to be incensed? We're not talking that smell good stuff. Somebody pull you over? Ooh. Somebody cut you off on the road? Policemen pull you over? What expletives would come from your mouth? That's this guy. That's how angry this guy seems to be. Jesus has just healed on the Sabbath. Second thing for you to notice. Jesus just violated the Holy Scriptures. Sit with it. Sit with it. The priest says, there are 6 days when work is permitted, people. And it seems he directs this to the woman. Really, I'm not messing with Jesus. He directs this to the woman. Come and be healed on one of those days, not on the day we're worshiping. He is angry. And by the way, this was a very good slide. I just want to tell you. He directs it at the woman, because we've already encountered Jesus, haven't we? Remember the guy used to tell you, "I really love what you preach, but some days Jesus gets in the way of what I believe"? Here's another thing, a little side note for you. Most research shows that people that don't go to church like Jesus. It's us they don't like. Here's another interesting little thing. Oftentimes people of the church love the Bible, but they don't like Jesus. Because Jesus knocks on our door. Jesus responds to the church leader, "Hypocrite, man, look at you. Don't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox? Don't you go out and let your donkeys get a drink? Don't you tend to the livestock on the Sabbath? Don't you violate the words of God? Then, isn't it necessary, isn't it absolutely necessary that this woman would be free from her bondage on the Sabbath day?" And what he's saying is, if you're going to violate the text, doesn't she get to? If you're going to work on the Sabbath, this woman's getting healed today. Uh-oh. Did Jesus just get in anybody's way? There's a wonderful quote. I love Wendell Berry. I haven't read all of his works because they are just tremendous. Anybody heard of Wendell Berry? There you go. Wendell Berry, what fascinates me about him is the far right loves to quote him and the far left loves to quote him. They both think he's on their team. Wendell Berry's basic life philosophy is, I'm responsible for the dirt under my feet. I'm responsible to care for the land that I have. I'm responsible to care for the things that I have. I'm responsible to care for my soul. And if you do the same, and if you come alongside me and you take care of the dirt under your feet, and then we get the people next to us to take care of the dirt under their feet, and then we do the same, we call that in church talk evangelism. But he says this, do unto those downstream as you would have those upstream do to you. Any hunters understand that? Any hikers understand that? How about Boy Scouts? How many Boy Scouts? There you go. Do you remember when we were kids and they used to tell us if a stream is moving over rocks at 30 miles an hour, you can drink from it? They did. Now, I want to know who got the radar gun to check that stream. But I'm a hiker. I do backpacking, or I have it in my 50s. Definitely not in my 60s. I want to. But as a hiker, there was a wonderful little advertisement for a water filter. And when we backpack, and really backpack, we don't carry a lot of water. We carry a water filter, and we pull it out of the streams. And we pull it out of the streams so that we don't get sick 20, 30 miles from nothing. Not the place you want to have tummy troubles, is it? But anyway, the ads had this guy been over drinking out of the water, and it had this quote, do unto those downstream as you would have do unto those upstream, and he's drinking from this beautiful crystal clear stream, and just around the bend is an animal in the stream doing what animals do in the stream. Another way to put the Wendell Berry quote, the way that you judge, that's how you'll be judged. But Jesus and the cross, I'm okay with that. I just know Jesus also said, the way you judge, you'll be judged. I don't know what to do with that. Anybody know what to do with that? For me, it tries to keep me humble. Because dang, I want to tell you people what's wrong. Isn't that how you feel? Quit acting like that. Jesus says we got to be careful. Jesus said these things, and the leaders were put to shame. Why? Most of us know when what we do is wrong. Every now and then we commit an oops. And we usually feel the woes, the guilt, the shame of that. And we usually pray for forgiveness. But then most of us have something we do that we know is wrong. And we hope for grace. But beware of the day you expect grace. Those in the crowd rejoiced over all the extraordinary things that were happening. The leaders of the church were following a premise of do what I say and not what I do. Grace is all we've got. For there have been days I didn't deserve it and I got it anyway. And there are days I hope to get it in the future. But I must never expect God to give it when I know what I do is wrong and I have no intention of changing. For that has crossed a whole different line in our lives. And we must be wary and watchful of those lines. Are there things I don't like in the world? Yes. Are there things I don't like in my denomination? Yes. But there's dirt under my feet, and it's called Foley, Alabama. And in that space are people who are hungry and people who need Jesus. And there are those of us who walk through life and hurt. I want to say we had somewhere around, what, 8 deaths in 9 days? Yeah. And so when we come, task one, look around. Look around at the collection of hard life and pain and brokenness that we bring into this space. Be thankful for grace when you didn't deserve it. Be hopeful for grace that lies ahead. But never expect grace when you have no intention of changing. For that is the day you must revisit your cross and start from scratch. Well, there you go. What you gonna do with that? My Lord, I don't know what to do with some of it. I know there are days I just want to pontificate. And then there are days I am so overwhelmed that you have given me grace. Here we are, stuck in that space. Guard our hearts from expecting what we don't deserve. Keep ourselves humble that we hope for a gift that only you can give. Keep us watchful to notice those who live around us. Amen. I'm going to rearrange all